Good evening, it's 6 o'clock. And I'd like to call to order the Planning Commission meeting for Tuesday, August 17th for the city of Arroyo Grande. We have a roll call, please.
Chair Martin?
Here.
Vice Chair Shiro?
Here.
Commissioner Buchanan? Commissioner Guthrie?
Here.
Commissioner Maravilla?
Here.
Very good. You should stand for the salute to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any changes to the agenda that any of my fellow commissioners would like to make at this point? Hearing none, seeing none, we will move on. We typically open our Planning Commission meetings with the open community comment period. It's an invitation to members of the community to present issues, thoughts, comments, suggestions on matters that are not scheduled on tonight's agenda. Comments should be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission. And members of the public may provide public comment remotely by joining the Zoom meeting utilizing one of the methods provided by the, it's a below on my agenda, but if you're in a Zoom meeting, you're not looking below, you're at the Zoom meeting. I'm assuming those that are interested are able to either raise their hand or make some kind of indication to the support staff we have here that are running the Zoom meeting. So is there anybody that would like to speak and address the commission at this point? Is there anybody in Zoom that is watching the meeting that would like to have any comments that they would like to share?
If anyone on Zoom would like to make a comment, please raise your hand now. Chair Martin, there are no raised hands.
Very good. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the community comment period for tonight. And then continue on. Are there any additional written communications that we are expected to receive that we have not already received?
Chair Martin, there are none.
Very good. Thank you. The consent agenda tonight has a single item on it. It is the approval of the meeting minutes of the August 3rd regular Planning Commission meeting. I will entertain a motion to approve.
Make a motion approving the minutes of August 3rd.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the minutes of our August 3rd meeting. We have a roll call vote on this, please.
Vice Chair Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Maravilla?
Yes.
Commissioner Buchanan? Yes. Commissioner Guthrie?
Yes.
And Chair Martin?
Yes. The minutes of the August 3rd meeting are hereby approved. The next item we have is the public hearings. We have two public hearing items on our agenda tonight. The first one is consideration of amended conditional use permit 21-002. It's a revision to a condition of approval regarding parking for conditional use permit 18-005 at 995 East Grand Avenue. Do we have an updated staff report on this, please?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Martin. I'm Andrew Perez, Associate Planner, and I'll be presenting this application for the amended conditional use permit. So the project site is located at 995 East Grand Avenue, which is located in the Fair Oaks mixed-use zoning district. The project applicant owns two adjacent parcels. Parcel one, as indicated on this image, is an existing structure that houses three different land uses, and parcel two is a parking lot that supports and serves each of those uses. Going back to November of 2018, the Planning Commission approved conditional use permit 18-005, which authorized the establishment of a religious facility, a coffee shop, and a commercial lease space in an existing structure at this site. With that approval, the Commission conditioned the project to provide 88 parking spaces on Sundays and 33 spaces for the remainder of the week. Because the 88 spaces exceeded what was provided on the project site, the applicant obtained off-site parking agreements to meet their parking requirement in accordance with another condition of approval. So the application before the Commission's consideration this evening is a request to amend two conditions of approval related to parking from that 2018 conditional use permit, and an approval of a shared parking reduction that would allow the applicant to extinguish their existing off-site parking agreements. So no physical changes are proposed, just the amendments to those conditions. So this table illustrates the parking requirements that were established with CUP 18-005. So the column on the left are the land uses that were authorized with that permit, followed by the parking ratio for each use, and then the actual parking requirement for that project. So if we look at the church use, the parking requirement is one space for every five fixed seats. There are 240 seats in the sanctuary area, which requires 48 parking spaces. There are seven religious education classrooms, and they require one parking space per classroom for a total of seven spaces. The neighborhood coffee shop requires one parking space for every 100 square feet of publicly accessible floor area, resulting in 14 parking spaces. The commercial lease space requires one parking space for every 250 square feet of gross floor area. And so that was estimated to be 2,628 square feet, which should have resulted in a parking requirement of 10 and a half parking spaces. However, due to a mathematical error during the processing of that permit, it was mistakenly noted as requiring 17.28 spaces. So tonight's an opportunity to fix that mistake, if nothing else. And then finally, there was an apartment that existed at the project site when this was entitled, and that required two parking spaces. So add it all up, and parking requirement for the entire project site was 88 spaces. So since that entitlement a few years ago, there have been a few minor changes. Probably most importantly, tenant improvements for the coffee shop and the commercial lease space have been completed. So the initial parking requirements were based on estimates during the entitlement. And now that those tenant improvements are completed, it's actually resulted in floor areas that were less than originally estimated, which has, you know, dropped the parking requirement. So that, in conjunction with the math error that artificially inflated the parking requirement by seven spaces, there's an overall reduction of 12 parking spaces, as illustrated in this table. So no change to the religious facility, the church, or the classrooms. The coffee shop ends up being 228 square feet, less than originally anticipated, so a reduction of just over two spaces. The commercial lease area ended up being 348 square feet, less than anticipated, so a reduction of 1.4 spaces. And the residential unit was demolished as part of this project just because it had inhibited circulation through the site. So it was determined that the best course of action was to demolish it. So with all those factors considered, the parking requirement for the entire site as it currently exists is 76 spaces, which is a reduction of 12 parking spaces. So given that the parking requirement is 76 spaces, and the applicant has 75 spaces between the two parcels that they own, they are requesting a shared parking reduction pursuant to Arroyo Grande Municipal Code 16.56.050. This code section allows up to a 20% reduction of the parking requirement when parking facilities are shared by multiple uses with differing hours of operation. So the applicant is requesting that the Planning Commission consider a shared parking reduction to account for that one space that they are deficient. So to affirm the parking requirement and the existing uses, the applicant is requesting modifications to two conditions. The first is which is condition 70 from the original resolution approving the project, which states that parking required for the proposed use shall total 33 weekday spaces and 88 spaces for Sunday use. It is suggested that the revised condition read, parking required for the proposed project shall total 76 parking spaces, and the parking shall be satisfied by the 75 parking spaces provided on site with the approval of a 2% shared parking reduction. If the Planning Commission were supportive of amendments to condition 70, it's suggested that condition 30 also be amended for the sake of consistency. Essentially, this condition requires the applicant to obtain shared off-site parking agreements in order to satisfy their parking requirement. And if we amend condition 70 and the shared parking reduction for them to, they'll be able to meet all their parking requirement on site. So the first sentence of this condition, it becomes unnecessary. So it's proposed that the first sentence is removed from this condition. But just want to note that the remainder of the condition will remain intact. That requires the applicant to obtain additional parking if any of the uses are modified to a more intensive use that requires more parking. So that kind of wraps up the project summary. With regards to the environmental review, the original project was deemed exempt from further environmental review because it was considered a project that proposed modifications to an existing facility. The proposed revisions before the commission tonight would not affect this determination, and the exemption remains appropriate. So with regards to public notification, the notice of public hearing was mailed to all property owners within 300 feet of the project site, published in the Tribune and posted at City Hall and on the city's website on August 6th. The agenda and staff report were also posted in accordance with the government code, and no public comments have been received to date. So in conclusion, staff recommends that the Planning Commission adopt the prepared resolution approving the proposed project amendments. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mr. Perez. Are there any questions from the commissioners for staff on this item? Any questions?
Yes, Mr. Guthrie?
Let me go with Mr. Guthrie and Mr. Buchanan. I'll give you an opportunity in a minute.
Okay. Yes, I'm wondering if staff or maybe other commission members, why they didn't consider a 20% reduction in the beginning, which seems like they would have never had to get off-site parking in the first place.
You know, I would actually defer to the applicant on that one. I wasn't part of the staff that approved the original project. But if I had to speculate, I think it's because the church use was anticipated to use more parking that was provided, given that that second parcel, where now the parking lot, wasn't yet complete. So in the meantime, I think they were asked to get to off-site parking requirements.
Okay. And when we're making the approval night, you mentioned that if a more intense use came forward, that they would they have to come back again? Because if we're giving them a 20%, are we giving them a one space tonight, or are we giving them a 20% reduction?
So tonight it's just a 2% reduction that's being considered, but they could request up to a 20% reduction.
Yeah, it does. It does seem like a natural for a 20% reduction. So, okay, that was my question.
Mr. Buchanan, you have a question?
Yeah, just a similar line of questioning. I just wanted to confirm that the applicant could receive 20% reduction for the night just based on amending the provided resolution.
Yeah, it is certainly within the commission's purview to grant a larger reduction than the 2% that's noted in the staff report and prepared resolution.
I have a question that piggybacks off of that. I'm wondering if, being that this 20% is within the municipal code, is this a a revision or a permission that could be handled administratively. I mean, if I'm the applicant, I come in, I said, I need a 10% reduction now, not a 2%. And within the code, I'm allowed to request up to 20. Is that something that can be handled administratively, or is that something that will typically come back to us as a commission?
The municipal code states that's at the discretion of the planning commission. So if a greater reduction is requested than what's granted this evening, they would need to return to the commission for that.
Okay.
Permission.
We're gonna, I'm just trying to get that clarified. I realize they've got a number of issues that certainly qualify for them to come back here, but I wasn't sure about that specific aspect of it. And then my other question just had to do with condition 30. You know, if we're going to amend that, you know, remove that first sentence, I'm wondering, would this condition become activated? If I'm going to say, if neighborhood complaints arose, that obviously if there's Easter Sunday or Christmas, you're going to have more than 240 people there, I'm assuming, at church on those days. But three Sundays in a row, suddenly it's overwhelming the neighborhood. The city starts receiving complaints. At that point, the city has an opportunity to go back to the applicant and I'll say activate this particular clause to say it looks like your use is exceeding your capacity for parking on site?
Not necessarily, because the applicant wouldn't be proposing a different land use. It would still be the religious facility. If they were added more seats on a permanent basis, then that would be a trigger to come back. But if they're still proposing the 240 seats, as are shown on the site plan, they would not need to come back for more parking.
Okay. I think I understand that. Are there any other questions from the commissioners for staff? I'm going to give the applicant an opportunity to make some comments here tonight. Good evening.
Good evening. Is it appropriate to leave this?
If you wish, you may take it off. It's going to be much easier to hear you
Thank
speak
you so
into
much.
The microphone without it.
Thank you so much, Chair. Yes. Good evening, Chair Martin, members of the commission. I am so happy to be here with you this evening, not only because I desperately missed in-person meetings, but I'm very proud to represent Grace Five Cities. So my name is Carol Florence. I'm a principal planner with Oasis Associates representing the applicant. I'm accompanied tonight by two of Grace's tireless heroes, Jeff and Jennifer Martin. Andrew, thank you for working with us on this project and for your presentation this evening. I will simply underscore staff's recommendation and respectfully request that the commission adopt the resolution approving the amendment to conditional use permit case number 21-002 based upon the findings and 7 conditions of approval. But given the considerations this evening by the commission, I am wondering if we might, if you will, up the ante and ask for a 20% mixed-use reduction as opposed to the 2. I don't think we ever asked for a percentage. We were just asking a little more globally about what the situation was and modifying that. So I'm open for that discussion if that's the case. As you read and Andrew reiterated, this is a very minor modification to the project, essentially a one parking space shared parking reduction. With that request, there are no other substantial modifications to the project, and the conditions of approval are still quite obviously in effect, which I think is key. With that said, I hope you'll indulge me, and I think I'm following Chair Martin's lead here a bit, and we did not talk about this, but I was just hoping to make a suggestion to the commission regarding substantial determinations and conformance determination, which I understand from staff that there's currently no policy in place in your Muni code to resolve something that seemingly as simple as this. So if we can take Grace Five Cities, for example, and their request, they are a nonprofit, and the fee, aside from planning professional fees, the fee to the city was over $3,000. So I think if there was appropriate policy in place, and many jurisdictions have code that relates to it, it would be up to Community Development Director to authorize the conformance call. And that's really based on some very focused criteria, one being that the change is in substantial conformance with the previously approved project, the second, that the conditions of the original permit or approval with are fully complied with, which that is the case here, and that the project's not modified, and typically that's an enlargement or some expansion of that. So I'm just going to leave you with that thought. It's probably something for another day, but this was, for me, a perfect opportunity to bring that forward. And for the sake of time, I just want to thank you for your considerate deliberations. Jennifer, Jeff, and I are here to respond to any of your comments or concerns before you close the public portion of the hearing. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much for your comments. Any questions? Carol, before you take off too far, why don't you stand close? I don't know what kind of questions you're going to be barraged with here, but
hopefully not.
Questions for the applicant?
Yeah.
Mr. Guthrie. Yes. Mr. Buchanan, do you have any questions for the applicant at this point?
Yes,
I'll make my turn. It's your turn now. Yes, yes, sir. No problem.
Thank you for the question, Commissioner. At this juncture, the parking is quite adequate for the uses at hand, and so we are completely built, if you will, on the site. Thank you.
Carol, I just
please.
Have a question.
Mic on. So you're asking for a 20% reduction, but you already have the 75 spots. The spots that number is already, you're good.
They exist
they
currently.
Exist.
Yes. And I really didn't realize that we could have asked for more. We were just saying we've made these changes. We now understand the project better. So it really wasn't coming in for the Muni code allowance, if you will. But now that there's conversation around it, it would certainly provide much more flexibility to my client.
So I guess my question would be, would you be taking some parking spots and turning them into something else?
No.
Or not necessarily?
No.
No,
it would just provide more flexibility. Let's say a use changes that has a higher parking requirement. Okay. We would still be in compliance with the permit at that point.
Got it. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions at this time?
I have a question then for staff. So if in the future we had, let's say, a significant change here, not just the office space, would there... At what point would a trip or review of the 20%? This is a natural 20%. You've got a Sunday, most of the uses on Sunday, and you have these relatively small uses on all the other days. But let's say it flipped around and it was a restaurant instead of a ministry. Oh, and I didn't turn my mic on.
Thanks. Well, it ultimately depends on what that modified use looks like. If there was a 20% parking reduction granted, you know, that would be, so we're looking at 62 spaces as a parking requirement, and they provide 75 on site. So if there's a intensification that requires more than 75 parking spaces that are what's available, then we would want to reconsider and revisit the application for an amendment.
I guess my question is more related to maybe the next set of uses isn't quite as obviously shared space as a ministry and a coffee shop. That, like you say ministry becomes a 240 seat restaurant, or I don't know what it would be, but that would change significantly the trade-off of it being a 20%. I think that's why it's discretionary at this point.
Yeah, that's correct. And And part of that is if the use were to change, it'd likely trigger a planning permit, a minor use permit, okay, in which we'd re-examine the parking situation. And, we'd look at it then and determine what steps were necessary.
It'd be a ministerial decision whether it needed to come back to planning commission.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
But if the change of use was significant enough, it would come back to us.
That is correct.
Okay, I'm going to ask if there's anyone in the public that is watching us on Zoom, that there is anybody out there that would like to participate and make any comments. I'm going to open for the public comment now. Raise your hand or do what you need to do remotely and electronically to get the attention of the people that are here supporting us.
Chair Martin, I'm not seeing any raised hands.
Very good. Thank you very much. Anybody else in the audience? I didn't invite the audience. You're sitting there anyway. Very good. Thank you. I'm going to close the public comment then and return it back to the commission. Any other commissioners, do you have any other comments you make until before we call for a motion on this?
Well, I'll just sort of question to staff. If we did decide to go with the 20%, I have a feeling that's where we're going. What would we need to change here? Can we still use the resolution, or is there some specific change we need to make?
We can use the resolution. We just need to either add a condition or amend a condition that's on there.
That's what I mean, yeah.
That's correct.
Okay. So if we make a general direction to amend the, so that we don't have to fix the language right this minute?
Yeah, that's correct. It'd be an amendment to one of the conditions and then a slight revision to one of the recitals.
Okay. So I actually have a comment beyond that.
I can't hear you.
And then comment?
Well, I actually wanted to make a comment on the general idea of it becoming a ministerial. And I just point out that we are talking about a general plan update, which would actually be the more natural place to do this.
Right.
And then trying to have staff come back with something. So I'm sort of jumping on that. It's, when we do the general plan amendment, we may very well want to loosen this or tighten the 20% rule so that it could be ministerial. But I think that would be better done as part of the general plan.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that's a good way to go. The only comment I'm going to make, and not that I want to specifically throw a wrench into it, but in my mind, this discretionary reduction is something that should be handled on an individual case-by-case basis, because this really is a discretionary. I know that the parking spaces exist. I know you're not planning on taking the parking spaces away, and I know you're not going to be adding another 50 chairs or seats or whatever to, you know, into the church. I just have a problem seeing a 240-seat church where their permit says 60 seats on it, where they don't need that. They've already got 75. I, for one, at this point, don't have any problem in granting them that reduction of one parking space in order to meet the compliance with what their parking lot currently lays out. I'm not very excited about giving them this 20% reduction. I think it kind of opens the door that every applicant that comes in with a parking issue could say, well, gee, we've got the opportunity to reduce by 20%. Can we get that 20% reduction? And we start over amending our parking standards without being able to look at it, each case individually specifically. That's my opinion anyway. I'm happy to entertain a motion on this. Yep. Sure. And what's your logic for removing that at this point rather than keeping that in? And if it becomes more intense? Sure.
We have a Grand Avenue enhancement plan in the city to sake of the plans there on Grand Avenue to promote a more walkable, more business-friendly Grand Avenue as we have in our Grand Avenue corridor, I would like to see those restrictions and the amount of time we spend debating parking on Grand Ave really decrease if possible.
Very good. It's a very good point. Thank you, Mr. Buchanan. You're now going to entertain a motion?
Can I just follow up? I'm sorry.
Sure.
Follow up on his question.
Yes, go ahead.
He did ask staff. So what's the point of the, what's the point of having this specific comment in this specific piece of this when if they change, if they do in fact have a more intense use, you're going to make a decision on whether they're over the 20% or not. So I'm just wondering what the purpose of this sort of ever was.
That's a very good point. It is, in fact, redundant because if there is a change in land use, it's going to have to go through the land use permitting process in which parking would be evaluated anyways. So it's basically reiterating what already happens. So, you know, if the rest of that condition were to be removed from the resolution, in a practical sense, it wouldn't have much effect on the future land uses and the development of that site.
And I'll just follow that up with a comment that in my experience on Planning Commission and then on Council was that I can't think of when we ever denied the 20% reduction unless there was something obvious, like, you know, everything was a restaurant or everything was office, even though they were individual office spaces. I just don't think I've ever seen the 20% denial. So I'm totally comfortable with doing it here. And to Commissioner Buchanan's comment there, find a way to make it as automatic as it almost is. I mean, there are instances where it's probably not appropriate, but I've just never seen us deny it when it's even close to appropriate. So just more of a future comment, but tonight I'm totally comfortable with the 20%.
Yeah, I'd agree with Commissioner Guthrie. There's nothing that we don't even have anybody that lives in the neighborhood right now that's going, hey, we've got a problem. We've got no issues right now. So I'm comfortable with it as well.
Although there were, I recall in 2018, there were a few neighbors that were concerned about parking at the time that we did address. And I think we resolved at that point, but there certainly were comments about parking in the issue of particularly Sunday morning, you know, crowded parking on the street or into other people's private property, private parking lots that normally would be unused at that time that people just on their own volition would be using. So minor issue, but I think it still was something that we addressed and resolved at that point in time.
I guess I'd continue the agreement to that point further is that I would want evidence that there's a problem or that there's an exception, that generally the 20% is granted. In my mind, that's how I would see it. And I don't see in this particular case any issues with problems that I don't see anything that that would be a problem.
I agree.
Very good. Can I get a motion?
So I'll propose adoption of a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Aurora approving amended conditional grant permit case number 2102 with the change in language to include a 20% reduction. A 20% reduction instead of the 2%. And I'm going to propose that we just eliminate the entire
strike condition 30
as well, since I do think it's redundant. I think I understand why it was in place here, that it was to make the neighborhood comfortable. But anyway, that's my motion before I get off on.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any additional discussion or conversation? Mr. Buchanan, do you have anything that you would like to add at this point?
No,
I'm
just
Very good. Any other comments or? May we have a roll call vote on this item, please?
Commissioner Guthrie?
Yes.
Commissioner Maravilla?
Yes.
Commissioner Buchanan? Vice Chair Shiro?
Yes.
And Chair Martin?
Yes.
Thank you very much for that.
unanimously passes. Thank you very much. Good luck. Continued success with the church and the other activities, that the related activities that are out there.
Awesome. Thanks, y'all.
And next on our agenda is item 8B. It's a consideration of amendments to Title 16 of the Aurora Granite Municipal Code regarding accessory dwelling units and tiny homes on wheels, Development Code Amendment 20-001. Mr. Perez, you're on again.
Thank you, Chair Martin. So let's see where I'm at. All right, so make a quick presentation about kind of recapping our study session from 2 weeks ago and some of the revisions that staff has made to the proposed ordinance since then. But first, a quick reminder about why we are initiating this ordinance update. In October 2019, state legislation was passed that amended the development regulations with regards to accessory dwelling units. The proposed amendments to the development code and the ADU ordinance in particular are intended to bring the city's ordinance into compliance with state law. So 2 weeks ago, on August 3rd, the Planning Commission reviewed proposed amendments to the existing ADU ordinance. And based on comments from the commission and the public, there are three main takeaways that staff identified. The first being that the architectural compatibility standards should be modified to be more permissive for prefabricated units. To clarify the phrase, no feasible alternative, that was used with regards to ADUs on lots that cannot accommodate additional units in the backyard. And to add additional design standards for tiny homes on wheels that allow for some flexibility with designs, especially those that include features for light and some natural air for the occupants. So looking specifically at the architectural compatibility standards, the standards that we reviewed 2 weeks ago kind of inadvertently excluded prefabricated units from consideration because detached ADUs were required to use siding and roofing materials and colors that were matching the primary dwelling unit. And the siding and roofing materials aren't always able to be customized on these prefabricated units. So to account for that, staff revised the architectural compatibility standards to only apply to ADUs that are attached to the primary dwelling unit or created through the conversion of existing space. So those two scenarios would be required to use the same colors and materials as what's used on the primary dwelling. And detached units would be exempt from those standards. So for example, an ADU that was created through the conversion of a garage would be required to use the same siding as the primary dwelling when they replace the garage door that was removed for the creation of the unit. And then with regards to location, the previous draft ordinance stated that ADUs shall be located in the backyard unless there is no feasible alternative to do so. There are some comments from the commission that this phrase could be interpreted with some subjectivity and may not meet the intent of the law. So staff simply removed that phrase from the proposed ordinance, added that ADUs shall be located in the rear whenever possible, which allows for some greater flexibility, but also included that ADUs shall comply with the front setback as a standard. And then moving on to the draft ordinance for tiny homes on wheels. We heard from the public and the commission that the design standards for tiny home on wheels did not address really overall aesthetics. They're more restrictive to kind of discourage use of RVs as tiny homes. So we've added some standards that allow for more flexibility and more permissive of alternative designs, especially those that allow natural light and some airflow, as well as outdoor living area, just based on, as I said, the comments we heard, plus just more of a sustainable type of design to utilize our naturally wonderful climate we have here on the Central Coast. So to revise these standards, first we added that tiny homes on wheels shall resemble the general appearance of a traditional home, thinking that will discourage kind of the RVs from being pursued as tiny homes. There's an exception in the roof pitch standard that would allow for designs that incorporate openings and kind of extensions to allow natural air and light. Remove the standards that prohibits extensions and tip-outs. Along those same lines, be more permissive of these type of units. And then added standards for and defined decks and patios for tiny homes. And one area that wasn't discussed with too much detail last or 2 weeks ago was short-term rentals in ADUs. However, since the study session, the city attorney's office kind of provided us some guidance by stating that the state-mandated prohibition for short-term rentals in ADUs only applies to those units created under the by-right provision. So if you remember, the previous draft ordinance prohibited or proposed prohibiting short-term rentals in all ADUs created after the adoption of the updated ordinance. So prohibition of all short-term rentals is still an option that's available to the council if they so desire. And I think it'd be beneficial for the council and staff and the public for the Planning Commission to address that in their comments this evening. So that summarizes the revisions. They're pretty minor in nature, and I just wanted to remind the commission that tonight's public hearing notice was published on the in the Tribune on the city's website and at City Hall. The agenda and staff report were posted in accordance with the government code, and we did notify those interested parties as we did 2 weeks ago for the study session. So concluding with the recommendation, is recommended that the Planning Commission adopt a resolution recommending that City Council adopt amendments to the accessory dwelling units as proposed. I'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Perez. Any questions from the commissioners for staff on this? Ms. Maravilla?
I just wanted to know the thought process that went into the deck size for the tiny houses.
Yeah, it was just kind of perusing other ordinances that are in place and kind of thinking about a ratio of what we normally see at a traditional single-family home. I think it's not unreasonable to think of a 1,600-square-foot house with a 20-by-20 patio out back, 25%. But, of course, that's definitely within the purview of the commission. If you want to play with that percentage, that's allowed.
That's your question. Mr. Buchanan, do you have any questions for staff at this time?
No, not at this time.
Very good. Thank you. This time I'm going to open up to a public comment. We do have one individual sitting here. Is there something additional you would like to add tonight to the comments? If you don't mind introducing yourself again, that would be helpful.
Sure. My name is Joe Polin. I'm the owner of Central Coast Tiny Homes. I manufacture tiny homes on wheels here in the South County. And I want to, again, thank all of you for all your efforts here. I really appreciate it. And it's good to see everyone addressing the housing issue and, kind of give alternatives. Tiny homes are certainly not the answer for everyone, but it's an option for some. So I thank you for the changes also that we discussed last time. With regard to the design standard and the roofs, the new one says have a minimum of 12-2 pitch for greater than 50% of the roof area. As I showed you last time, that would eliminate my unit. I think, though, that leaving enough flexibility for whoever the staff is that will be approving these when they come before them. I do have the lights, the skylights in mind, and so that would work. But I would be a little concerned. I don't know if there's a better way to do it and what the objective is in having that minimum amount of roof pitch. I mean, is it to keep it from looking like a box, which would be completely understandable, or looking like a container with some windows thrown in it? I understand all that. I don't know if there's a better way to do it. Hopefully that won't be an issue. The bigger issue, though, that I would bring up, however, that I didn't catch last time, somebody else pointed it out to me, and I believe they submitted a letter from Smart Share Housing Solutions. Did they email or send a letter? I know they drafted one because they ran it by me. So let me address it. I don't know how we get to, I guess it's number four on the definitions of tiny homes, where it says a prefabricated or manufactured tiny home on wheels shall bear the California insignia of approval issued by the State Department of Housing and Community Development to demonstrate compliance for electrical, so on and so forth. I believe this is a mixing of two things. Tiny homes that are manufactured, they're manufactured kind of under the rules of a recreational vehicle, and they're required to be under 400 square feet. And for those units, they are, as you said in number three above, they're certified by a third-party inspector, and that's what we go through. When you cross the 400-square-foot threshold, it becomes a different animal. It becomes a manufactured home or a modular home or what used to be called a mobile home. And those are controlled by Housing and Urban Development. And those are certified, or I don't know what the term is that they use. And so I think we're mixing two issues here. Tiny homes on wheels under 400 square feet don't get insignias from the State Department of Housing and Community Development that I'm aware of. And so that might need to be checked, because that would be a barrier to anybody doing these tiny homes on wheels under 400 square feet. You could add, though, that when we do get certified by a third-party inspector, there is an insignia, a template, a decal that gets affixed to the home that does say that it complies with the ANSI 119.5 and the National Fire Protection Standards. So there is an insignia that you would want affixed to the unit that it is certified, but it comes from the third-party inspector as opposed to from the state. So that would need to be checked. I could be wrong. I've been doing this for 3 years. I don't know all the details, but so far that's never been an issue that I'm aware of. So those would be my two concerns. Otherwise, looks great. And again, appreciate all the effort. And happy to answer questions if you have any of me.
If you don't mind standing there just for a quick moment.
Yeah.
Does anybody on the commission have any additional questions for Mr. Polin? Is that your
opinion? Yeah, Polin.
I got that correct. Thank you.
Yes, thanks.
For Mr. Polin at this time? And it's a brief question, I think. The designs that we looked at from the pictures you shared with us at the last meeting.
Yes.
It looked to me like the structures that were there had a greater than a 212 pitch on the roof for at least 50% of their roof.
No, they don't. There is a part that's much steeper. It's closer to a 512.
Correct.
Part of it, and that's for aesthetic reasons, right. Not really practical reasons, although it creates some things. But the rest of it is less than the 212.
Yeah.
Okay. So well over 50% is less than 212.
What is the slope of? Is it flat? It's not flat. Though.
It's not flat. Yeah. And that might be a good enough one, is just not flat. It's between 1 and 2, I believe. There's a height limit on tiny homes, and so particularly units that are not wide like mine, And so they're pushing the sleeping area up above. And so the more slope you put on that roof, the less headroom there is in that sleeping area. And so you'll see lots of them that have less than 212 for that reason. So, but they are required to have egress. So there's going to be a window. And so in essence, you could say that the restriction you put in here to allow for light and airflow, because they have to have a window there, that may address the exception that you're looking for.
And I'm not a licensed contractor nor a licensed roofer, but if I'm not mistaken, roofs that have a pitch that are greater than 212 have a different manufacturing criteria from the state versus those that are less than 212.
Right. Some materials you can't use at a pitch lower than 212, like composition shingles.
Correct.
But, tiny homes almost rarely use that because driving down the road in a 70-mile-an-hour wind, you wouldn't use that. So most of them are using a metal roof.
Or a hot mop. The hot mop is probably even heavy and stuff for a vehicle like that. But
right, yeah.
In my memory, the 212 was kind of the...
Yeah.
From a construction standpoint, was a point of demarcation between...
Yeah, you're flirting with problems when you get lower and lower and lower. Yeah.
Just from being able to seal a roof or having it drain, et cetera.
But it doesn't rain in California, right?
It does not.
All right.
Very good. Thank you for that clarification. Kevin, do you have any other questions at this point? Okay. Is there anyone else from the public? I'm going to open it for public comment. Anybody out there in the cloud world that wants to raise their hand or participate and make a comment on this item at this time?
Yes, Chair Martin. We do have a participant on Zoom.
Okay. They're welcome to introduce themselves. You are now on. It's your turn.
Ariel Edgerton.
Hi. Hello. I'm here with
Good evening. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi. We're new to Arroyo Grande. I think we were trying to figure out about the short-term rentals. What is considered the by right provision? We just weren't sure, and we didn't see it in the documentation.
Okay. So, staff, do you have a clarification? We can just perhaps even educate people that are not asking that question. I think it's a very good question to pose at this point.
Yeah, of course. So within the draft ADU ordinance, Section E and a permit requirement, or I'm sorry, Section F, development standards, and then subsection D is the by right provision, which states, an attached or detached ADU with a maximum size of 850 square feet or 1,000 square feet with more than one bedroom shall be permitted in any circumstance subject to a maximum height of 16 feet, 4-foot side and rear setbacks, and compliance with all building codes. And no minimum lot size or lot coverage requirement shall apply.
Right, and that by right provision is taken from the state law, which establishes the by right provision.
And generally that if I have a lot in a backyard that's open by right, I'm allowed to build an ADU within these constraints.
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hopefully that answers your question.
Yes, perfect.
Yes, Mr. Guthrie, go ahead.
If I could follow up on that, just to clarify. So if they, as long as they adhere to the existing area standards, like 6-foot setbacks and 10-foot setbacks, then in the language which you, at least you proposed, they could have an ADU that is in fact a vacation rental.
That is correct. Okay. Yeah, so essentially any ADU that's proposed that complies with the development standards for the underlying zone would be eligible as currently proposed in the draft ordinance.
Unless we wanted to amend that to...
That's correct. Yeah, you have that option.
Very good. If there are no more public questions, public comments, I'm going to close the public comment period. Is there anybody else that's out there? I don't want to be cutting someone off unnecessarily that I can't see.
No, Chair Martin, there are no more comments from Zoom.
Very good. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the public comment period, bring it back to the commission. Any other comments before I ask for a resolution on this item?
I do have a question.
Just, sure, go
just
ahead.
Following up on the 2 and 12, because I was a little bit concerned about that too, because I do see someone standing at the counter interpreting it literally and denying the a tiny home on wheels, as we saw last week. I could see that at least at the counter, maybe in a step two, that they would not want to approve the pullouts because they didn't have so I didn't quite understand why the clarification about air and I don't have the language in front of me would resolve that question. So I'm glad he brought it up, because I did mean to ask about that. So how do you see somebody at the counter interpreting this and saying, okay, because you have a window, I'm going to let you have a 1 in 12? Is that how you would put it?
1.5
to 12. Yeah. So that is a concern of mine. So
I think that roof slope that's in the draft language or the draft ordinance is more of an aesthetic standard than anything. It's to prevent the boxy looking, you know, mm-hmm. discourage ADUs or C trains from becoming tiny homes on wheels. I think there's certainly room for improving that language if there's a recommendation or suggestion from the commission. I think it's very, very valid to look at that and maybe tweak that language to be more permissive and try to generate the creation of some of these units that we need for housing.
So what you're saying is that if Mr. Pullen came up right now with his some of the tiny homes that he has with the pictures that we saw last week, your interpretation of what we have here, that's gonna get approved. Is that?
I think that was the intent behind the language change. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, I think my other comment.
I just piggybacking on Commissioner Maravilla's comment regarding the size of the deck. You know, think about that. So 25% of 850. That's our. Is that what is our biggest tiny home is
400.
So you're talking
4 by 10.
Yeah, that's a pretty small space.
it's a porch, not a deck.
Exactly. Yeah.
Stairway.
So I would certainly be open to increasing that percentage to say 50 or 40 or something that just because I just think we live in a place that's just so nice so much of the year and you know, a lot of times if you lived in some other places with some more adverse weather you wouldn't be using it all that much, but here you could use it a lot and have a really comfortable, nice outdoor experience, and even though you have a very, very small place to live in. So I would certainly be open to that.
Yeah, I agree with that statement. I think 100 square feet is pretty small for a deck. So that was kind of what my question was leading towards, just because I can see these things being put on larger properties a lot too. And if there's the room, why are we restricting it, basically? I'm also I don't know what the right language is for the roof, but I think we need to amend whatever that is on there, because, I mean, I'm assuming you're one of the major manufacturers in this area.
Major is.
We'll just, I mean, yes, and it's very limited, the manufacturing of these products as it is, and we want to be able to encourage as much of it as possible. So I just don't want to limit that because I want to see these things being built. I'm also would like to encourage that we prohibit short-term rentals on all the ADUs or encourage city leadership to do so. I think the intent of the state law, as well as all of our you know, development codes are to encourage people to live in these rather than rent them out. So I would like to encourage that.
Can we just openly discuss that point right now? I understand it that looking at it on the surface, that you're going to have more people helping more people out to have a place to live, and that's minus the short-term rentals. But short-term rentals do provide people the ability to live here and afford to live here from the income in the short-term space. And I, to be honest, I start thinking about it and I go, okay, so how many people are going to rent a tiny home on a short-term basis? You know, that market's probably pretty small. No pun intended. But ADUs, I know that ADUs, and we have friends that have ADUs that short-term rent them. So we could only think about, you can think about the short-term rental. You can also think about the person that's doing the renting and trying to make that payment of the house that they have. That, I see that, I think it's it's an incomplete thought when you think about, we want people to be able to live here. And I know right now I have some friends that have a junior ADU and an ADU, very close to here, and they do it on a long-term basis. But if some people felt like they could make more money and needed to afford it, I think I'd give them that freedom. I just think it's going to be one of those things that you don't see it too often. Just because it's just a pain in the butt. Everybody that I know that does it short term it's a lot of work. You're a hotel clerk and you're having to, see people come in and out. But I just think that should be a part of personal choice. Although I do think that probably the state is going to interfere possibly one more time. We'll be back here probably next year. It looks like that's going to, there's a couple of bills I know that are in committee right now that actually just went through committee that it looks like they're going to be mandating that. So this point might be moot.
Yes, please.
Yeah, so I guess my thought is twofold. One, I just think it would be administratively difficult to deal with ADUs, even as the caller who was obviously paying attention, knowing that this one is a by right. Well, frankly, your other ADU is by right as well. It's just not a right to these special exemptions. So the by right language, I understand why it's there, and that's the way it has to be, but it's confusing to me, and I know something about it. So I think, for one, that the administration of that, it's going to be tough enough to enforce ADUs rented as short-term rentals anyway, because of the general difficulty of identifying them and then going out and enforcing it. The second point I would make is that, that short-term rentals are probably a more profitable, certainly more profitable way. It's not like someone building an ADU and running it is not making any money at all. I mean, I often wonder whether it's really fair to think of these as affordable units, because they're probably not going to be by most standards. But I would like to see it go forward with the all ADUs cannot be short-term rentals, not just the by right ones. I share with Commissioner Margavilla that the point of this, of pushing ADUs, is in fact to build rental availability, not really to become a profit center that makes it possible to buy homes. For one, it's my understanding that a bank won't include your even rental income on an ADU, let alone short-term rental ADU as income in approving a loan. So I understand how it might work mechanically, but I just don't see where the gain in some people being able to maybe sort of slip into a home that way versus the potential improvement to the rental market comes from regular ADUs. Thank you.
And I tend to agree with you, I think, on that. It's a difficult issue because we'd have tourism is such an important part of the local economy. But for me, I think balancing the needs for, we can put affordable in quotes, I think, but to me, the need to find housing in smaller units that are have smaller dollar numbers attached to them is great enough to want to be able to limit that. I think that people will be able to find mechanisms and ways to create or have short-term rentals in their homes, if that's an avenue they want to pursue, you know, economically for them.
I had a question regarding current ADUs that are already out there, who are short-term. How does this affect already permitted ADUs? What we're doing here.
I think our current ordinance, those would not be affected. So short-term rentals that were already approved with an ADU would continue to be a short-term rental.
Okay.
And then anything, you know, depending on the action by the city council, the new rules would kick in at that time.
Maybe that's how we couch that condition, is that we encourage city council to give this specific, you know, consideration. We can give our own recommendation, but have them, they're really the decision-making body in this particular item. Is that true?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Mr. Buchanan, do you have anything else that you would like to add before I request a motion on this item?
So those units created under the by-right provisions would not be eligible for the short-term rental permit. So the process for operating a short-term rental in the city is through the approval of a minor use permit. In staff's research, when we get an application, as is currently proposed, we'd have to look back at the plans, see under which development standards an ADU is developed, and then we can make a determination as to whether that ADU would be eligible. So as it's currently written, does create more of a burden for staff when we get these applications in the future. That's what the state law says, so we can go further if we choose to do so.
Okay.
I'm missing some data because I don't know how many
Very good. Thank you very much. I'm going to entertain a motion at this point, and there may be a couple of amended conditions on this.
I'm looking at spending. I did the last one, so if someone wants to do that. I'll do it if you want. Okay.
Go ahead, Jim.
I'll propose a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Arroyo Grande recommending the City Council adopt ordinance approving development code amendment number 20-001 with the following two changes. One, that there's language that permits extensions or just flat out tiny homes on wheels. Keep wanting to call them toes. I'm sorry. Tiny homes on wheels can have a 12-to-1 roof, either specify an extensions or specify just 12-to-1 overall, whichever staff or the commission approves. And that we recommend that all ADUs, that all ADUs not be short-term vacation rentals. So we prohibit vacation rentals in all ADUs, not just those that receive the benefit of the state law.
Do I have a second?
Did we want to say 1 to 12?
Is that what I'm?
Yeah.
12-to-1. Yeah. Okay.
12-to-1.
Well, the way it's written in here, it says 12-2 on it, but it's.
Is that right?
1-to-12.
Typically, it's the other way around. It should. Okay. This should be probably written 2-12 the way it's here, but. Proposed would be 112.
Right.
Correct.
I don't think I interrupt, but the issue of certification,
I was going to see that got added, but we need to get a second before we can start discussing on this item. So if we can have a second, then we'll
I'll
add
second.
Some more. We have a motion and a second. I would like to add this under the tiny homes on wheels, under the B4 definitions. Remove the, on the second line here, remove the State Department of Housing and Community Development, and I would put in there a certifying party. Hopefully that's kind of generic enough to, at some point in time, given the development and expansion of this particular type of housing, there could be changes in how the state certifies these. And just, I think if we put in a generic language that there could be or should be or will be a certifying party of some kind. And so there is, that affirmation, whether it's a sticker or a decal. So rather than specifying it's the Department of Community Development, but, that a certifying party. That may be redundant at this point with item number 3, but I think that ends up being inclusive enough to Right. We're not trying to create a rule where one doesn't exist. We're trying to, a certification that doesn't exist.
Item 3 doesn't mention displaying some proof
Correct. It's a little bit awkward to have you talking here, and you're not here, but the comment that was made is that B3 does not talk about a certification or a decal or a designation, an insignia, a visible insignia of some kind, and definition 4 does. So that's my proposal, is that B4 gets changed from State Department of Housing and Community Development to certifying, party or certifying agency.
Approved third party agency or inspector.
Correct.
The motion maker accepts the amendment.
And I would also like to see the deck portion. I'm going to increase to 100%. I think what the intention here is that if the floor elevation of the tiny home on wheels is, let's say, 24 inches above grade, that how large a deck is really appropriate for something like that. Not that I'm planning to put one in my backyard, but I may only have a 10 by 10 porch on that. But what gets defined as patio or deck or landing may end up being one step down or two steps down, and could easily need or want to be more than just 100 square feet. So to me, I'd like to see that increased to literally 100%. I had a 400 square foot patio sitting outside a little 400 square foot tiny home on wheels is not going to be overwhelming visually, or even that ends up with an 800 square foot footprint in someone's backyard, and even in most cases that's going to be fairly small. So I'm recommending we also change. This is, well, it's hard to getting down in the weeds on this one. Tiny homes on wheels, it's the C criteria, C7E, which is on page 19 on our notes here, but decks, attached patios, limited to 100% of the floor area of the tiny home on wheels. So those are two changes that I would like to see made. If I can just get, that's supportive of the...
The motion maker supportive.
And the second, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Mr. Buchanan, do you have any questions or comments before I call the question? Correct. And if there are, and I'm comfortable with that wording myself, but this is also a situation where this particular resolution is going to go on to City Council for their review and evaluation, ultimate vote. They may choose to change their position from what our recommendation may be. Is that, am I overstating that, Mr. Perdotta, or not?
No. That's true. The City Council could alter. I think just kind of a point of clarification on the on B4 regarding the insignia. That just came out of discussions with our chief building official, and so we'll certainly go back and discuss that with him regarding the size and requirements for insignia, and if the Planning Commission is amenable to that. To provide some flexibility in how that language ultimately makes it to the City Commission based on City Council based on our discussions with the Chief Building Official.
Absolutely, it's certainly certainly my intention, and frankly, I think it's, or hopefully, it's the intention of the manufacturer member of the public that spoke tonight. The way I was just being led to understand, these units that are less than 400 square feet don't get defined by the state in that manner, so they don't actually qualify for an evaluation or certification. If he's wrong, if I'm wrong, we're all wrong, whatever the wording needs to be done to make it make sense for those manufacturers that need to go through whatever certification or inspection process, I think we're all in favor of making sure that those things, pass muster. But I think mostly it's just getting the wording clarified so we're not, requiring somebody certify something that state doesn't have the ability or the code enforcement ability to do, because it by definition doesn't meet that criteria.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Let's have without any further questions or comments. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Guthrie.
Yes.
Commissioner Maravilla.
Yes.
Commissioner Buchanan?
No.
Vice Chair Shiro?
Yes.
And Chair Martin?
Yes. It passes 4-1. Thank you very much. Let's go on to the next couple items. We're here winding down on our meeting here tonight. Number 9 is non-public hearing items. There were none. And item 10 is a notice of administrative decisions. The thing that I just I'm taking a note is that all three of these are establishment of vacation rentals. I know where these three addresses are. I know that we've asked in the past. I asked Mr. Perez. I think we have about 60 or 61 of these vacation rentals now approved within the city. I'm wondering if we're getting near the point. That's still a fairly small number compared with the total number of residential units within the city. But I'm wondering if we're getting it to a point where some of them may be bumping up against each other as far as location on any particular street or address. And I know that I've requested it, and it's an issue of some staffing and opportunity and stuff. But do we have even a sample of locations, these locations, where some of the nearest other vacation rentals may be?
Yeah, Chair Martin, absolutely. So you look at the screen and here at Council Chambers. So this is an example what we use on the staff side that we want to provide for the public eventually on our website. So it's kind of small, but 117 Pool Street is located kind of in the almost in the middle of this image. And you see the red and blue icons for vacation rentals and homestays that indicate where they're located. So this is one means that staff uses to determine eligibility kind of on the fly when we get questions from the public. And then kind of moving on to Dodson. You know, there's some vacation rentals on, I believe that, I think it's Ash Street, and then not sure what the one below is, but similar to Branch Street. See some on La Pointe and Crown Hill. So this is ultimately we want to be able to provide for the public. It's just a matter of getting updated and overcoming some of our staffing issues at the moment. And just as a point of clarification, so as of today, there are 37 homestays permitted throughout the city and 73 vacation rentals. And so that's since 2014. However, just this year, we have a total of 24 applications and 4 short-term rentals. So, you know, pretty good increase we've seen just in the last, I would say, 6 months or so.
So when you're saying 20-some-odd, so we've gone from about 50 to over 70. So we've increased by almost 50%. From the beginning of the year, or we have a third more at this point, but
approximately.
Okay. And the way the code currently reads, I think this, if you can indulge me for a moment, the one there on East Branch, 439 East Branch, it's kind of on the lower center within this particular picture. And we have, it looks like, 2 vacation rentals. The one vacation rental is that up the hill toward Paulding? And is that both, is that, and because of the way the current ordinance reads, that's a different street address? And I'm assuming that also exceeds 300 feet, isn't that? That would meet both criteria?
That's correct. So that vacation rental nearest Paulding is technically on Crown Hill.
Okay.
So as the current ordinance reads, no 2 vacation rentals are allowed within 300 feet of each other on the same street. And so we interpret street literally by street name. So if, you know, assuming that vacation rental near Paulding wasn't there, you know, there could be a vacation rental directly across the street, across La Pointe, on Crown Hill from this East Branch property, and that would be allowed under our existing ordinance.
Okay, so hypothetically, in our community, if in a little cul-de-sac or a dead end, we could have 3 different houses with 3 different street addresses within that 300-foot range, so we could end up with 3 vacation rentals. because they had a different street address that was facing.
It's correct. Yeah, there are some situations where there could be houses that are back to back, and
well, it's kind of like the vacation rental that's in the top left quadrant there at the end. I don't remember what the name of that particular street is, but if that was at the far south end of that, much closer to the East Branch, we would have that vacation rental there around the corner on East Branch, and then literally across the street on Crown Hill, we could have ended up with three vacation rentals visually within, you know, visual, you know, just visually. I'm losing my
in pretty close proximity to each other.
Maybe very close proximity, but by definition.
By definition, that would be allowed under the existing ordinance.
Okay.
And we, some time ago, and I believe it was the middle of 2019, maybe the end of 2019, we had a discussion with the Planning Commission about vacation rentals, and I think just due to some staffing changes and then the COVID pandemic, that discussion never was elevated to the City Council, so perhaps it's something we revisit in the near future.
I agree. I appreciate the time that you took in order to put this little snapshot together. I think this would be a great tool for people that are seeking to add vacation rentals to see if their particular residence qualifies. I think it might also be helpful for people that are, you know, purchasing homes and looking at, you know, the growth of vacation rentals, seeing that increase. The aggregate number is still fairly small in our small town, but it's increasing very, very quickly, and it's something I think we just need to keep our eye on. So I appreciate the effort you made to put those maps together for me tonight for these three items. Seeing three on the single agenda, we have seen one, I think we may have seen two, but seeing three in a two-week period says, hey, we've got vacation rentals coming, and your comments about the increase just this year-to-date confirms that. Any other questions or comments on the administrative decisions?
Yeah, I just
Ms. Buchanan, please go ahead.
Thank you. You already saw some of my data that I was kind of holding aside for these list of vacation rentals here. I do want to reiterate that, I also as someone looking into the housing market, I see some of these properties come up for sale. I think what's driving a lot of these vacation rentals is pure speculation. A lot of these houses are sold for close to $1 million and then become vacation rentals to speculate on that price before they can be used full time, or they don't want to be rented out long term. Just to comment here, but like we said, we're not seeing a whole lot of vacation rentals here. I think the underlying problem here is housing prices and the value that's being bid up on these prices, and the fact that people who live here can't afford those prices based on the amount of money they're making here in the area working in our city. So it'd be disappointing to me to see some of this and interpreting this as the action that needs to be taken here is shutting down short-term rentals rather than continuing to build out housing in our city that meets the needs of the people who live in our city. I think that's the issue we should be focusing on.
I think that's a great comment to encourage City Council members to consider as well, because as we go ahead, obviously there's no decision. We're just making kind of conversation tonight and on what we're seeing here, but these are all good comments on the state of residential real estate here in our community. It's an issue that's way, way bigger than the city of Rio Grande. It's certainly something that's statewide, particularly in coastal California. Any other comments on the administrative decisions?
Well, Kevin just said it better than I was probably going to say it anyway, but that's basically was going to be my point. But I think sometimes you get into a false dilemma where you think, vacation rentals are certainly the bad stepchild right now in a lot of people's views, and they're creating issues with housing. However, they're also, when you think about where these vacation rentals are and what the people who, when they go there, where they go. They come down here to the village and they eat and they spend money with for our retailers that, you know, they create walk traffic. So I just feel like there's a way to do both, to encourage both in the right proportions as much as we can. I mean, the free market in a way will do that. We, in our current city code, we can't have, because of the distance, there's only so many that can get built and approved. So we kind of do have a constraint already. What the state is going to come down with in the next year probably is going to, you know, could change all that. But, I just wanted to point out that it's, there are businesses that do, benefit, from short-term rentals. And everybody knows me who's listened to me over the last couple of years. I'm a huge proponent of housing and affordable housing and workforce housing. We need both. Like Kevin said, it's the problem isn't just an approval of a vacation rental here or there. It's not building enough housing that our workforce can afford and can live close by their work. So that's my point.
Very good. Any other comments from the commissioners tonight? Mr. Buchanan, any closing comments before we adjourn the meeting? Doing my best here. Thank you for your key comments. I'm really glad you've joined us on the commission. We're able to have a full commission at this point. Any staff communications at this time?
Thank you. Brian Pedrotti. Just a couple things. We had a downtown parking advisory board meeting on the 11th of August. Talked about parking downtown and some of the time-limited green curbing. We also talked about parklets and specifically safety design, the impact of businesses downtown, and it'll help staff develop a plan for addressing kind of the future of parklets in the city. Then we also had a meeting with the Regional AD Stock Plan group. A consultant has been chosen, and there was a kickoff meeting with the four jurisdictions, so that effort is also moving along. And that's all.
Excellent. Thank you very much. With that, my watch says it's 7:33, and this meeting is here adjourned. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.